Initially drawn to belly dancing as a form of exercise, Camera soon discovered that it was a great way to express femininity, which was something they always struggled with. But after a decade of gyrating those hips, Camera came out as trans male, which put into question everything, including his identity as a belly dancer.
For Camera, this meant either giving up his life's passion or having to readjust what dancing means as a trans artist. Today, the fierce and fabulous Camera, Chicago's first trans masculine belly dancer, joins us to talk about their journey in belly dancing, performing as a drag king, and incorporating belly dancing into burlesque.
Plus, a Russian man rips off his clothes before trying to board a flight, claiming his nudity would make him more aerodynamic.
Canada discovers the world's largest Tyrannosaurus Rex.
And Grimy, whose viral video where she licks an airplane toilet seat, grosses out the world. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Pillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Guess what?
What?
We've got a new Patreon page.
Oh my God, we do. Where is it?
You go to patreon.com/feastoffun. The audience has been asking, hey, why don't you guys do a Patreon? So we finally did.
It's there, baby. Go check it out. Patreon, Feast of Fun. Patreon.
Feast of Fun.
Our guest today is Chicago's first trans masculine belly dancer, Camera, who for over 18 years performed as a belly dancer and then 3 years ago came out as trans. And because we tell everybody you can have it all, Camera still does both very, very well.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome to Feast of Fun, Camera.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Glad to have you.
So tell us about your extraordinary journey, because you first discovered your passion for your life through dance. Mm-hmm. As a belly dancer. What got you inside? I mean, were you a kid who watched I Dream a Genie or
no.
something?
Well, kind of, yeah, but that actually wasn't where the belly dance stuff came from. So it was a friend of mine and I back in, this was actually in Louisiana. She wanted to start to like do exercise and stuff like that. And I couldn't go to the gym and I hated going to the gym and she couldn't go to the gym. So we found these old, this is how long ago it was. It was VHS tapes. They were on sale for like $10.
Mm-hmm. Where did you, that at Walgreens or something at a yard sale?
It was at the Discovery Channel store. So
yeah. Do they still have those?
No, I don't think so. I don't even think they exist anymore. But yeah, Discovery Channel used to have a store and they would sell like VHS. And so they're having all these sales on VHS tapes. And they had three, they were the belly dance twins, Vina and Nina. And so I got them and one of them was like fat burning and all that. So I'm like, oh, this sounds great. And I continued on with it and my friend did not. Mm. So I was doing it for exercise. And then
do you feel like it helped you get into shape?
Absolutely. Yeah.
What is it about? Is it like cardio or is it just
shaking
those hips just is like burns calories?
A little bit of both. So you can do cardio. In fact, I teach a cardio class on Sundays. That's belly dance.
Oh, wow.
So you can do cardio, but it's also a lot of muscle control. So you have to build your muscles. So now I've had to go back to the gym, which I hated, in order to be a better belly dancer. So
yeah, in the bodybuilding world, it's very controversial, but there's a lot of people who want to do vacuum poses again. Do you know what that is?
Vacuum pose? No, I don't.
Basically when you suck in your gut so much
that
you're like doing that sort of Indian Swami kind of thing.
Yeah, okay.
To make your midsection as tiny as possible.
And it's a classic bodybuilding thing. You'd like see a vintage like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Pushed in.
And I guess that sort of training your midsection to do that is actually really good for your pose, for your gait, for your movement.
Yeah. Well, having a strong core, I mean, that's important for belly dance is because we have to have a really strong core. So it's like I have a really great set of abs underneath my little protective covering. it's like you got to keep them warm somehow, right?
Right.
So it's you know, a lot of ab work. It's a lot of because I use my hips a lot. So my obliques are really strong. All that stuff.
A lot of planks and stuff.
Yep. Shimmy planks. So I'll go in a plank and then shimmy in place.
You're going to have to show me that one after the podcast.
Yes. Yeah. If you really want to hate yourself afterwards, you can just shimmy plank. Yes.
There was some guy who just did a plank for like 35 minutes. He was 70 some years old.
What?
Yeah, he was.
Cher can do them really long
for
too.
For only 5 minutes. This guy did it for like 35. I don't know if it's the world record, but I was like, wow. I was super impressed.
Yeah, I can only do them for a minute.
I might be able to do 2 minutes. I've never timed myself because it doesn't really matter that much to me, but I could probably do 2 minutes.
Mm. Can you describe me like what your performance was like before you came out as trans?
Sure.
As a belly dancer.
So it was really hard for me in the beginning because I was not very feminine, like when I started belly dance. So it was kind of like this weird hobby that I had. I'm like, yeah, I like wear big baggy shirts and I don't like to show off my body, but here I'm going to be dancing for you half naked. So it was weird.
And did you wear like a traditional outfit, like a bra and then like a little, like
yeah,
a
the
little
belt, yeah.
A belt and then all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
The bells and
whistles. All the fringe and the, all that stuff. I danced, you know, completely feminine, tried to be as feminine as possible, wore makeup up all the time, tried to get like really into, and I mean, I'm always into body positivity, but in the, like the feminine form, you know, like trying to celebrate curves and being like proud of my breasts and all that stuff. And it was really hard for me because inside I'm like dying. Like I'm supposed to be so body positive and love my boobs, but I really, really hate them. So yeah.
But you weren't quite there yet to identify as trans.
Right. It took a while because I mean, it was like the only trans people I knew were trans women. So I didn't know that you could be trans man, like a trans man or trans masculine. And I mean, it makes sense, you know, now it's like, oh, well, duh. I mean, of course you can be trans masculine.
I remember seeing a video, or maybe I read it somewhere online, and this woman, she was a belly dancer and she was kind of very outraged and she felt like belly dancing was being co-opted to please men. It was originally something that women did to like entertain each other during like childbirth or something like that. Is that kind of thing.
Yeah. Some of the, we call that like wishtery because some of it isn't really real and some of it is. So the whole childbirth thing is a no. That's, you know, like belly dancers have babies all the time and they're like, well, I mean, I guess it kind of helped, but in other ways it really didn't. I mean, because you have more control over your belly muscles.
Sure.
But that's not necessarily going to help.
It's not like they're just like, let me shoot this one out.
No. Nope. Nope. Not at all.
Yeah.
So in your dance training, what led you to your interest in martial arts? Kenpo, jujitsu, karate, kendo, third place in the world taekwondo championships.
Yeah.
Do not fuck with camera.
So martial arts came first.
Okay.
So when I was 13, I got picked on a lot as a kid. So my parents put me into taekwondo in order to like defend myself and give me self-confidence and that sort of thing. So I started martial arts first. And then as a beginner, I went to world championships, which I think they're still held there, but at the time they were held in New Orleans. And so my sensei took me to world championships as a beginner. So I was a white belt, like beginner. Like I'd only been doing it for like a couple months and I won third place in world championships. Like
wow.
in the world, I was as a beginner, third place.
Were those championships anything like the Karate Kid movies?
Kind of.
Was your opponent really attractive and you secretly wanted to have sex with them?
No, I only, cause well, at the time I was, you know, I was a little girl. So, so I fought against other girls. There was a Russian lady who was very intimidating.
Oh, really?
Yes. Thankfully she ended up getting disqualified before I ended up having to fight her. So,
oh, really? What'd she do? Was she juicing or something?
No, she was hitting people where they shouldn't be hit. So they're scoring places. So, the black belt, the black belt tournaments are different. So like what you see in Karate Kid, like where they can, you know, sweep legs and do all that kind of stuff. You couldn't do that in beginner. Mm-hmm. You only had certain places where you could hit, where you'd get a score and, and get a point. And so she was hitting people in places where they weren't supposed to. It was illegal hits, basically.
Okay.
And it was hurting people. So they disqualified her for that.
Camera, is it true that polishing a car can help you with karate?
I mean, it could really like increase your strength and your muscles. I mean, cross training. I mean, you know, that's a good thing.
Wax off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're referencing the Karate Kid movie.
Oh, yeah.
People don't know. What is he talking about?
I saw a whole bunch of Cobra Kai's and I got a picture with him at C2E2. So
that's the actor.
So that's the bad guy, bad guys in the movie or the Cobra Kai's.
Oh.
And so there are a bunch of people dressed up as Cobra Kai's and someone dressed up as Daniel in the shower. So I got pictures of them from C2E2. It was great.
Daniel in the shower. What's that reference? reference?
That's from Karate Kid. So when he dresses up as a shower to go to the Halloween.
No, I barely remember that. But I trust you.
I always had the biggest crush on the villain, William Zabka, who played Johnny, the villain.
Yes.
He was the blonde villain. You know,
blondes are always villains.
And you know what? If you Google his name, he still looks good today.
Yeah.
He's like, he didn't crack.
And Ralph Macchio didn't turn out to be some weird Trump supporter, did he? That was Scott Baio,
no,
right?
That's Scott Baio.
Yeah, Scott Baio. Yeah,
thank God. At least one thing from my childhood still good. Right. And so for you, like, you sort of became really good at so many things. We actually have we call it a jack of all trades phenomena that queer people, because we're sort of misfits, we're the middle children of society or world, we aim to please each other and we are very attracted to show business. But even if we don't find ourselves in the path of show business, we become good at all kinds of things. And chances are, if you talk, especially, like, I've noticed this with a lot of, like, modern trans people, they're like, Calpurnia Adams is one of them, musician, field surgeon, playwright, talk show host, like, it's this crazy long list of things.
I think part of it is that we get scared that if we come out, we're going to get fired from our jobs. And so we try to hoard as many skills as we can.
Yeah, that's so true.
So that we can, like, okay, well, I can't make it in corporate life anymore because I'm trans or gay. You know, it's like, maybe I can be a performer and then I can do this. And I can do this.
But what was your, like, interest initially? And I'm just, sorry, going to lay this on the audience. Not only are you good at all these other things, you're also a research scientist with a background in molecular biology, biochemistry, immunology, and currently you manage an undergraduate laboratories in a local university.
Yeah. So, yeah, I have a bachelor's of science in microbiology. But when I graduated, microbiologists were kind of like not needed really. So I had a lot of training in biochemistry and molecular biology. I've done cancer research. So like major cancer research, like funded by the Army, multiple millions of dollars.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. If it was for the Army, was it to give people cancer? Or
no. No. So the Army considered breast cancer to be a national emergency because it was killing so many people. They basically figured out that it's like, if we keep going and we don't figure out a way to cure breast cancer, we're not going to be able to have enough people to defend ourselves.
Get the fuck out. Really?
Yeah. So they started funding breast cancer research.
Is that public information?
It is now.
Wow.
Do you know, are they still funding it? Do you know?
I don't know. The grant that I was on ended, but that particular researcher has, like, gone on. I don't know. I've lost contact with her, so I don't really know if she's continuing with the Army.
That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
What do you think is causing breast cancer to escalate at that number, or has it always been that way?
I mean, cancer has always been around. It's not really a new phenomenon, but, I mean, because we actually technically, so here's what's going to blow your mind. Technically, we all have cancer all right now. It happens all the time. It's like a normal cell process. Like, your cells, whenever they divide, sometimes they divide incorrectly, but your body has special cells that are called natural killer cells that go around and try to find these cancer cells. And when they find them, they kill them. But what happens is the cancer cells, some of them will learn to hide from your immune system. Mm-hmm. And that's when they become the problem. And you get like what we think of as cancer.
Okay. So if we are exposed to more toxins, that sort of puts our immune system in jeopardy.
Right. So,
and that's why the cancer can hide, because it has time to hide.
Right. And I mean, there's a lot of things that cause cancer. So there's no, like, one thing like this right here is what causes cancer. There's never going to be one cause, and that there's also never going to be one cure either. Because everyone, when you get cancer, it's your own cells. It's not like there's an invader coming in. So it's really like your cure has to be tailored to each person. So, like, what type of cancer they have, where it originated, how it mutated. So usually it requires at least one or two mutations in the cell in order to become cancerous.
So they say a lot of modern diseases actually are sort of immune-related disorders to some degree, whether it's HIV and AIDS or, even just the body attacking itself.
Allergies, autoimmune disease,
cancer, and all that stuff. Do you see, like, you know, because you're probably somebody who knows a lot about what is in the future, as we sort of get better at treating these diseases, will we be able to eradicate these? If fighting for cancer and fighting for HIV and AIDS and autoimmune disorders are sort of interconnected to some degree.
I mean, it's hard to say with cancer because it's so individual. Yeah. We can get more and more effective treatments for cancer, but there's no real way at the moment to stop cancer from starting, because we'd have to monitor all of our cells all the time and be like, nope, you can't, you know, you like, no.
And there's no way to do that.
Not currently. And there's no real, like, kind of drive towards that sort of research. So we're looking for treatments that actually are more effective. So
eventually we'll be able to just beam it out of our bodies. Like
that would
Star
be nice.
Trek, right?
Yes. That would be great.
Well, they said that space bulimia is you're always eating and then they just beam the food out of your stomach in the future. So 3 years ago, you decided to come out as trans.
Yes.
And at that point, it was kind of a hard decision for you because all of these things that you really loved in terms of belly dancing were sort of brought into question. Should I, can I continue?
Right. Yeah. So it was like belly dance has always been kind of, you know, like seen as this really ultra feminine thing, you know, that only women do, which is totally incorrect. But it's perceived that way. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, can I still have a career as a belly dancer and be trans? And there are famous male belly dancers. So I'm like, well, you know I can be famous as a male, but are people, because I'm like, I'm already in the public eye. There's no way I can just like disappear and then come back as a male belly dancer. I'd have to basically transition in the public eye. Mm. So, you know, it was kind of like, well, I can't just be a male dancer. I'm going to have to be a trans dancer. And can I have a career with that? And there actually is another trans dancer who kind of showed me that you can. So there's a dancer in Texas named Draconis. And
Draconis.
Yeah.
Sounds like a vampire.
So like a dragon, actually.
Yeah. Draconis.
Yeah. And he's a fantastic dancer. We actually did a duet and we went like mildly viral in terms of belly dance. Mm-hmm. We went mildly viral on YouTube when we did a duet together. So first time ever two trans masculine belly dancers dancing on the same stage.
So how did your style of dancing change from, you know, before you transitioned to after you transitioned?
A little bit. Yeah. So my presentation changed. And and then because my muscle mass changed, you know, it's like before I had large, wide hips, all of my weight was in my butt. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I still have wide hips because that's never going to change, but I have wider shoulders. So it's like my center of gravity changed a little bit. And so there are some movements that are easier for me now. We do like back bends and what are called Turkish drops, where you bend over backwards and then drop to the floor. It's kind of like a death drop, but you do it from a back bend.
Okay.
So those became easier for me. And then just my presentation has changed. Mm. And then some of my, movements have changed a little bit. But
this is really fascinating. So, so it's almost like your art started to change as you sort of started. Do you think that the testosterone replacement therapy had an impact on that?
Or was
So it was definitely like that physical change, changed the way you were dancing.
Yeah. And then also people have told me, so like I've had I've probably had maybe half a dozen, you know, to 10 people come up to me and tell me that when I'm on stage now, like they've seen me before I transitioned and then they've seen me after, they've seen me perform and they're like, you're so much more you. So you're more confident on stage, you know, you project more, your energy is better. And then dancers that I've danced with, both before and after, have said the same thing. Mm-hmm. My friend Sam, who's she does the American tribal style. She was my teacher for that. She had danced with me before and afterwards. And she told me, she was like, you know, your energy is different, you know, and it's just like, you're so much more confident. Mm. And so that has changed. And so it's actually gotten so much better for me as a trans masculine dancer, because now I'm not carrying this thing in the back of my mind where I'm like, I'm this weird, like, it was almost like doing drag. And I would call getting into makeup getting into drag, because it was like, you know, so it was like when I was presenting female, it was like I was so uncomfortable with it because I had to put on all this fake stuff in order to be able to perform. And so that was kind of separating me from my audience. Mm-hmm. And I was having to project myself through this, like, character. It was like a cataract or something over my character. And I just couldn't get through it. And now that that's gone, I can, my own personality can
kind of
come
through. You're free to express yourself more. So
yeah, yeah.
Dance. In terms of like your gender identity, where do you see it now today? How would you describe it as somebody who's not you?
So I'm transmasculine. Okay. I do use trans man, but sometimes man kind of makes me a little uncomfortable. But for the
jerks.
yeah. I mean, I'm trying to get more comfortable with it. And I have a couple of trans guy friends who we talk about that sort of thing, you know, and kind of like, it's almost like trying to reclaim man, you know, and be like, yes, I can be a man and not be, you know, like toxic or horrible.
Well, it's also, you know, it's, we're people, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, you're a masculine person or you're a feminine person. It's not this great divide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I tend to, I kind of fall in the non-binary area a little bit, you know, because I don't quite feel like totally like over on the man side. There's a part of me that's still feminine that, that likes makeup and glitter and stuff like that, which, you know, I mean, men can like that too.
You were telling me when we were talking about you coming on the podcast that belly dancing in a way is, although you identify as transmasculine now, it's a way to celebrate femininity as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like I can connect to my femininity more in a healthier way, because when I was trying to do it before I transitioned, I was connecting to my femininity in a way that was really, really unhealthy for me. It was kind of like I'm shoehorning myself. I'm like, I will be feminine. I will be feminine. And it was just, it felt so unnatural. And now I can like, I can be flirty and feminine and I can wear skirts and then I don't feel like I've been shoved into a weird box.
Yeah, I always tell, try to explain that to cisgendered people, you know, the heteronormative people, that like drag for a lot of people or theater allows us to be more, by pretending to be somebody else, it's easier to be our authentic selves. And for you, that you also identify as a drag king,
yes,
not a drag queen, even though you present as male and identify as male, masculine. So it's like you're sort of saying the real me is also the staged me, which is also the fake me. So you're, you're blurring the lines between real and fake, too.
Well, and then also, I mean, drag is about being like something you're not. And so, I mean, like, I'm, you know, I'm non-binary, I'm transmasculine, I'm not fully, like, a man, but, like, as Gabriel Knox, I can be, like, fully male, you know, do all, I mean, it's like, I don't want to portray, like, toxic masculinity or anything like that, but it, it gives me a way to kind of access the way more masculine side. Although he's gotten a lot more feminine too, because, you know, it's like,
sure. Your stage, Gabriel Knox is your drag king name.
Yes.
And do you ever run across like, any trans men who are like, you know, deeply into toxic masculinity? They're jerk, macho jerks.
Oh yes.
What do you say to them?
As little as possible.
How does that manifest itself? That,
I mean, they really
identify that.
They really buy into, you know, like you have to be a man's man. You have to like, you know, hunting and fishing and, you know, they really buy into those like gender stereotypes. And, you know, they treat women badly and, you know, that sort of thing. And so thankfully that's rare, but you do encounter them. And then a lot of them,
Wouldn't they be like pariahs in queer circles and stuff? Or
you'd think,
you talking about your ex?
No, not at all.
Like, no. I'm going to get even with you. I'm going on this podcast to talk about you.
No. None of my exes are trans. Yeah, I mean, you see it. And then a lot of them are also like very anti non-binary. So they think like non-binary people aren't real. And that sort of thing. So,
well, it's an interesting phenomenon I observed both in, you know, I'm not sure if this manifests itself as much in, you know, cisgendered gay women, lesbian circles, but certainly like gay male circles and trans circles have this issue of authenticity, that if that you're not really trans or really gay, if unless you're meeting a certain set of criteria.
Yeah.
And usually you hear this expression, walk the walk, not just talk the talk, but walk the walk.
Yeah.
And they want to see surgery. They want to see hormone replacement therapy. And if you're not doing that, you know, you can't be in the cool kids club.
Right. And we call those people true scum.
True scum?
Yeah. Okay. So it looks like trust scum, but it's actually true scum. So that's in the trans world, that's what we call people who are like, you know, you have to have dysphoria to be trans. You have to at least want surgery. Like if you can't have it, you at least have to desire it. You have to want to be on testosterone. You have to want to be, you know, like a man. And that's really kind of like, well, why? I mean, you can, you know, like some people can't do top surgery. Some people can't do HRT. Some people can't, you know, transition.
Some
to that.
People got freaked out by needles.
Yeah. I mean, you can do like the pumps for testosterone. So, you can do like, it goes through the skin.
The gel.
Yeah. The gel.
The creams.
But I mean, that's a pain in the butt. So
can you masturbate with that gel?
You probably could. And I would bet you that some guys have, because that's supposed to increase the size of, like trans male penises.
Oh,
So
it's, you have a gorgeous beard. I have to say, I'm like, of the three of us here, you have the best beard in this room.
I like my beard.
Well, yours is nice and thick, and you have that. What Mark and I very admire is those tiny little red hairs. That's so hard to get by. If you
my red hair all turned gray.
I know.
It was the first to go.
Yeah.
The red and the blonde just went poof, out the window.
But so for you, like, and I remember this in the 90s, some trans men or women, who people who are assigned female at birth, who are experimenting with their gender, and I don't know if this is even true, they were going around telling people that they were taking testosterone gel and rubbing it on their face to get the beard to grow. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't think that does anything.
Yeah, there's some people who think it does. Mm-hmm. And it's really complex, because the testosterone, so there's what's called dihydrogen testosterone, so DHT. Yeah. And that's what actually causes you to have like male pattern baldness.
Mm-hmm. Androgenic.
So, yeah. So it's like, in some cases, DHT causes hair to get nearly lose hair on the head, but then it causes your beard to grow. Mm-hmm. And so people have been taking DHT instead and using that to increase beard growth or to increase bottom growth. But then they think that if you rub it in that place, like just regular testosterone, that it'll convert to DHT there.
Because I was asking my friend Pete, who's trans, I was like, is there anything I can do to get a hairier chest? He's just like, no.
I love
no. I was like, I no, can't rub it.
It's genetics.
No.
We need to fight for trans rights so then everybody can have the dick that they want and the hair where they want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's all genetics. So, yeah.
This is why, like, transphobia, you know, it's like, it's just working again. Against the you're wanting to have a big dick. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, if we put as much money as we do in the military into, like, well, you know, the technology,
the people who are in power don't want people living their authentic lives.
Yeah.
And so if they want to stop it every chance they get, whether they're gay people, whether they're trans people, whether they're artists, they're just like, no.
Both of your names, Gabriel Knox and Camera, were names you chose for yourself.
Yes.
What are their origins? Because those always make great stories.
Yeah. So Camera is from, it's loosely based off of the Arabic word for moon. So El-Amar or El-Kamar, depending on the dialect that you're talking about. I didn't want to take something that was like absolutely Arabic, but also when I started Belly Dance, there were five dancers with the same name. It was my dead name, which I'm not going to say. Sorry. So in the same city, there
Brittany.
Were five.
You don't have to apologize.
That's okay. There were five of us that had the same name. And so when we would have shows, it'd be like, and here's another one, and here's another one, and here's this one, and here's, and we would end up in shows all together. Mm-hmm. And it was very confusing. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to take a stage name, because this is ridiculous. You know, I can't be in a show
on a stage. Why not?
Yeah. So I didn't want something that was really like super Arabic, because I didn't really feel like that was my place to take something that was like overtly Arabic. And so I looked around and I saw that moon. And so I like Googled it. I'm like, does anyone have this? No one had it. You couldn't find it. There was no one named Kamra. And then like 2 months after I took the name, there's like an Indian village somewhere that got like bombed that was Kamra. Oh man.
Geez. Oh my God. This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah. So it was like, okay. But you know, like it's basically a name that no one else had.
And Knox you picked because it rhymes with Cox?
No. I mean, that's great. But so Gabriel, you know, is a angel, which I didn't. Sure. I'm like, I'm not Christian, so that really doesn't.
Protector of the home.
Do you identify as Muslim?
No. Or? No. Oh, okay. Nope. Technically I'm pagan, but I'm not really practicing that much. But
you have a baby in the back you can sacrifice.
Okay.
What? Jesse?
That's the other style of paganism. That's not the flavor that I do.
That's Wicca, Mark.
Oh, sorry.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, too, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a baby, it's a dog. No, yes. Just kidding.
What were you saying?
Your drag king name is Gabriel.
Yeah.
Knox.
So Gabriel was like, you know, so Gabriel is my new legal name, and I named myself after Eric Draven's cat. So the crow has the cat named Gabriel. And because I didn't want to name myself Eric Draven, because I felt that was a little bit too, you know, I was like, okay, well.
Because for the listeners out there that don't know, you're a big geek.
I'm a super geek, yes. So I felt
you love
was,
your comic books.
I do, yeah. So I named myself after his cat instead, and it's a beautiful name. I think Gabriel is such a lovely name. And so I took that, and then Knox was just kind of like, so like my email address for Gabriel Knox is King Night Angel. So I was like, so Knox means night. So okay. Like angel of the night sort of thing.
Ah, yeah. Angel of the night. Now, you know, one of our other favorite guests of the podcast, a lot of our listeners will know her as Pleasant Gaiman, but also as Princess Farhana.
Yes, I know Princess Farhana. I've taken multiple workshops from her.
Oh, how was that? What was that experience like?
She's hilarious. So I don't know if you know this, but if she walks into a room, like the electricity in the room does weird things.
She's very into electric energy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, and I have witnessed this. So like anyone, if they're going like, oh yeah, whatever. No, I have seen this happen. Like she walks into a room and the lights dim. It's yeah. It's really weird.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, and
yeah,
like,
she's told us stories on the podcast about that kind of weird stuff.
Stereo equipment doesn't work right around her. Yeah.
She's pressing buttons. No, I'll get it to work. Here it is.
Yeah. I kind of want to be in a room with her and see what, cause we talked to her over the phone and I'm always like, she's just dropping the phone. You know, it's not like, she's like, cause the phone starts malfunctioning.
She's like, my Wi-Fi doesn't work in the house and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. No, right. It's totally her.
With the name Gabriel, there's also, of course, there's, you know, the angel Gabriel, the Bible and stuff. What is the meaning of, because there's an expression when Gabriel blows his horn, meaning like, it's end times.
Yeah,
it's,
so he's the announcer of Armageddon, basically.
Armageddon, yeah. Was that a factor in your choosing that name as well?
Or? No, I just really liked the name Gabriel. And I mean, it was mainly the cat.
Because that was a name that I gave a character in a musical that I wrote called Glamour in America. It was kind of a cross between Evita and Romeo and Juliet, and takes place in the future in a post-nuclear apocalyptic Earth.
Okay.
And Gabriel is the gay president who is a right-wing figure who's in the closet because he's gay, and he launches a thermonuclear war. And,
oh, dear.
You know, and destroys all Earth and makes everybody into almost near dead albinos.
Well, that's definitely not me. So,
but so that what's interesting about the name Gabriel is also it's somebody who like announces change.
Yeah, he's the messenger.
The messenger. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you see yourself as that? Like in some ways that you're like you know, sending a message.
Yeah, definitely. So, especially in belly dance, and this was kind of the reason why I wanted to come on the podcast, was to kind of tell people about like what belly dance is, that it's not like this weird, like strange white lady, old lady hobby, you know, sort of thing. you know, that it's actually, that it's fun, that, you know, anyone can do it. We try to be very, very body positive and that sort of thing. So it's like, that's the kind of message I want to get out there, and that it's queer friendly. So it's like,
There
are trans people. You know, I'm like, I'm not the only trans belly dancer out there. There's a couple of us, you know, and so that it's something that like everyone can do. And so that was kind of like the message I wanted people to know, is that, you know, like belly dance is really cool. It's great exercise. It's fun. It's really challenging. It's one of those like rabbit holes. Like you'll never, ever learn at all. So if you want to just like have something that's going to be with you forever and ever, and you're going to keep doing until you drop dead from it, it's belly dance.
So you can't just put a towel on your waist and go, na, na, na,
no, definitely not.
Do you do the Dance of the Seven Veils?
No, although, so I started burlesque recently, and I do some belly dance there, and one of our shows that we had recently was all about kink. And the guy who hired me wanted me to do veils as a hanky code sort of thing.
Oh my God, how
so
fun.
I started pulling out veils of different colors, and I used Peach's hanky code song. And so was pulling out different colored veils and dancing with them. And then I ended up doing a black veil and danced to Depeche Mode's Master and Servant.
Ah, so what is black? Is that Master
like,
and Servant?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, like BDSM
right.
Play.
Okay,
yeah.
Right on.
And so I guess people are asking, you know, about your BDSM play.
Oh.
do you get, because part of it is like being a performer is you're putting yourself out there and you're getting a lot of people sort of like, you know, and you're inviting. It's a very flirtatious practice, and good actors, good performers are tend to be, you know, slutty a little bit. With a, in a pride, no, capital S,
yes,
right?
Totally fine.
How do you manage or negotiate that? You're putting yourself out there in a very sexual, body positive way. And sometimes, you know, you have to tell people no.
Yeah. Well, for belly dance, we try to keep belly dance like as wholesome and family friendly as possible. Yeah. Because it does have this kind of image of being, you know, like really, you know, like the whole like Sultan dancing for the Sultan and that sort of thing, which is really Orientalist and not at all what it is. So we try to keep it as a wholesome image as possible. But it's like you're dancing like with a body and you're dancing half naked. So of course it's going to be sensual and sexual in a way and people are going to take it that way and that's fine. But you know, like belly dancers are always like, you can't mix burlesque and belly dance. You just can't. And I'm like, well, why not? Because both of them are celebrations of the body, you know? And it's like, there's nothing wrong with our bodies. We can celebrate them.
How do you negotiate that resistance? Cause you're sort of always breaking these walls there, right? With a trans, male, female, your authentic self, your stage self, the world of drag and the world of burlesque.
Well, I want to show people, you know, it's like I dance, you know, when I do belly dance, I'm usually topless. I mean, I do have some tops. It depends on the venue. I have things where I can cover up if they, you know, if they're a little bit more modest and that sort of thing. But it's like, I want to show my body. I'm like, you know, I'm like, my body is normal. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, I have scars. You know, I've actually had people think my scars were makeup. And they're like, wow, your makeup's great. Like I had a straight guy tell me, he's like, your makeup is great. And I'm sitting there going, why is this straight guy telling me my makeup is great? Thinking, you know, like face makeup.
Okay.
And then later on, his wife told me, that he had thought that my scars were makeup because I was doing a sword dance. So he thought it was
like you got hit by Zorro. Yeah.
So, oh, wow. But I want to like normalize trans bodies, you know, and show, and then I wanted to do burlesque, not just for, mainly for me to kind of get used to, you know, like thinking of my body sexually and, you know, and sensually and that sort of thing and being comfortable. Cause it's like, you know, I don't always have the same parts as, you know, like a cis man does. And so I'm like, is that going to weird people out when I do burlesque? You know, it's like, do I wear a packer with it or do I not? You know, does it matter?
Well, so in the history of drag kings here in Chicago, they used to rule the roost.
Yeah.
And they would pack venues with easily 500 people coming to see the Chicago Kings at the Vic Theater. Margaret Cho sort of debuted her burlesque routine and notoriously would striptease and to show a prosthetic penis. And people are like, Margaret Cho has a penis?
I didn't have my glasses on. I was like, Foster, is that real? He's like, no, it's not real. I'm like, okay, you know.
Yeah.
But it was really complicated because a lot of the audience expected to see Margaret Cho do sort of her standard comedy. And she never spoke at all, I think. To my recollection, and a lot of the audience was really off put by Margaret Cho sort of reclaiming her body and her sexuality, and
they wanted the funnies. They didn't want her dancing. Yeah, you know what I mean? It was weird.
Why is she dancing? Why does she not go to a microphone and tell some jokes about her mother?
I sometimes worry about that with burlesque when I do belly dance at a burlesque show, because I'm always like, are they going to expect me to take my clothes off when I'm doing belly dance? Because I usually don't.
You're eating at a restaurant and belly dancers, you tip them, don't you?
Yes, you can.
Okay. And do you just hand them the money or do you stick it in their bra or what do you do?
Well, you shouldn't stick it in their bra. it depends on the dancer. Well, yeah, it depends on the dancer. So some of them will offer what we call body tipping. Some dancers will not. Okay. So a lot of times they'll have like a vase or a bucket or something like that they'll come around with at the end of the show and you can put the money in there. Or they'll have armbands where you can put it in their armband. If they offer to like, if they give you a hip, sometimes they'll tease you. They'll like show a hip and then you try to put the dollar in. And they're like, no. And then they'll offer it again. And then you try it again. And they're like, no. So they'll kind of tease you with it. So you can do that. But you never want to like just grab someone and shove a tip somewhere. I've had that happen. And it's like, okay, so here's what you, why you really, first of all, it's bad manners, right? But then also, we dance like 25 minute sets. So if at the end of 25 minutes, you're going to be grabbing a dancer, you're going to be grabbing a sweaty dancer. So you probably don't want to do that. I had a guy once like run his hand down my belly.
Ooh.
And it was like, it was at the end of my set and he just ran his hand down my belly. And I was like, I was looking at him and he was kind of like, oh God, that was a mistake. And I'm like, yeah, dude, it's like, I'm slimy by the end of my set.
There was this interesting thread that on social media, that drag queens tend to be very combative on social media here in Chicago, at least. I don't know about other cities, but
I'm sure they are.
They sure they are, you know. But and they were attacking other drag queens who don't make eye contact when a fan tips them a dollar. You better make eye contact with those people who are giving you a dollar because they deserve your respect.
Mm, yeah,
and I was like. I'm always a people person and I'm always making eye contact with people, but I also understand, you know, as a performer, you want to focus on the performance, not grabbing a dollar for somebody, because otherwise the performance just looks like somebody getting money out of an ATM.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that very exciting.
Right.
And the irony is all these people were the iciest, most customer unfriendly people I know talking about the irony of how they see other people being very cold and hostile.
Mm.
And I noticed this in dance communities tend to be very supportive of each other. Whereas I've noticed not in the drag king scene when it was big here in Chicago, but recently with the drag queen scene, they tend to always look for flaws or ways to call out each other and sometimes to try to get each other's gigs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of that does happen in belly dance. Like we actually, I don't know if I should talk about this or not, but there was a gig that was stolen from, another, like a group that had a gig for like over 10 years.
In like a restaurant or something? Or?
Yep. And another group just came in and stole it from them. In the belly dance world. Yeah. So it happens in belly dance, but we do try to be supportive of each other. There's always going to be bad apples, you know, people who like undercut and stuff like that, which I'm like, why would you be so stupid as to go to someone and be like, I'll do it for less money. I'm like, okay, I guess, but that seems like really poor planning.
It's because other people put in the work and they're just like, well, they've already set up everything. I just have to show up now. So why not?
Why not ask for more money though? I'm like, come in and be like, oh, well, I'm so much better. You're going to have to pay me like this much more in order to dance here because I'm going to give you a better show.
Mm. It's like a hermit crab that moves from a bigger shell into a little one to piss off the other hermit crab.
Right. It's like, you're just hurting yourself. You're making less money. This makes no sense. Oh. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me at all.
So you went to C2E2 this weekend. For people that don't know, it is the Chicago Comic and something
Entertainment
Expo.
Yes.
So it's, you know, it's all the comic book stuff. It's all the nerd stuff. It's kind of like Comic-Con, but a little bit smaller, right?
Yeah.
What did you see this weekend? What was the hot thing?
So
what did you dress as? Because you have to go dressed as
of course. And I'm the huge nerd, so of course I had to dress up. So I dressed as a Sith Lord. Mm-hmm. Not a specific one. I just have like Sith style Jedi robes. And so I went
just casually hanging around.
Oh yes. I just, yeah, they're just around, you know? So I went as that. And it was actually because I had a choice between Kylo Ren and the Sith Lord. And I actually chose the Sith Lord because it has more layers. And then I didn't have to actually bring a coat to C2E2. So I'm like, I'll just go around on the CTA in my Sith robes and it'll be fine. So yeah, I went to C2E2. One of my friends, Don and Mitchie, they were on a panel together about Asian representation in comics.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to their panel, which was really great. And then I just kind of walked the floor, hung out with some friends. I bought a bunch of cool stuff. So yeah.
Lots of like toys or
no, like
cats or what do they call them?
No. I try not to get that kind of stuff because then I would get into the collectible like black hole and I'd never escape from like all the stuff in my apartment. But I bought like some shirts and I bought a pin. One of the pins that I bought says weird and shy, which is like perfect for me because I'm weird and shy. And then there was another pin. I actually got to support another trans guy. Mm-hmm. So there was a pin that all the proceeds were going towards them for their top surgery.
Oh, awesome.
So I was like, of course I'm going to buy the pin. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Nice.
It was a lot of fun.
I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us. We should get into some strange news.
Have you guys heard about Grimey?
Grimy.
Grimy is an American sex worker and posted on Twitter a video of her in a toilet on an airplane and she's licking the toilet seat.
Oh.
And it has gone completely viral.
Is Grimy the name of the girl?
The girl, yes. They call themselves Grimy.
And but that's the movement.
The name is Grimy and she's flying to Barcelona and they have video and there's a quote underneath it saying like, I've licked a lot of toilets in my day, but this was the first that made my tongue go numb.
Oh, God. As a microbiologist, that's very frightening.
Well, they later fessed up that they had cleaned the toilet before. And I guess this is kind of like their name is Grimy. So that's one of the things they do. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are really into like toilets in a sexual kind of way. And
sure.
I think they're doing this for probably a specific client was like, I want you to lick a toilet.
And probably
$500.
Camera, why is it a bad idea? I mean, lick a toilet.
And don't they say actually the handle to the toilet, to the bathroom,
the underneath of the seat.
Is actually dirtier than the actual toilet seat itself or something?
Well, I mean, think about it. You know, so you're putting your rear end on the toilet seat, which, you know, there's not going to be a, I mean, you're not actually putting your butthole on the seat. I mean, at least I'd hope you weren't putting your butthole on the seat. But then you wipe yourself, and so your hand comes into contact, and then you flush the seat, or you flush the toilet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the handle is going to be definitely more disgusting than the seat is. But still, I have bad news for anyone who keeps their toothbrush right next to their toilet.
Mm.
Every time you flush, you're spraying aerosol of all that stuff into the air, and it's going to get all over your toothbrush.
So it's all over your bathroom,
too. So it's safe to lick the toilet.
Well, maybe. I mean, I don't recommend
it. It clean,
but
can
I always
lick it?
Rinse my toothbrush before I
use
it.
Oh, that's not going to do anything to the...
It's not going to do anything?
To the bacteria, no.
Should I dip it in peroxide or something?
No, you should just close the toilet seat whenever you flush.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Is it a danger?
How am I going to know if the poop goes down, though?
Well, you can check it later.
Okay.
Is it a danger, though? Like, I mean, I'm just thinking of millennia of people all over the world flushing their toilets with the lid open in the toilet. And really, is it that dangerous?
Well, I mean, if you're immunocompromised or if you're already sick, it could cause other problems. I mean, it's your own bacteria. And so, like, you're probably going to be okay whenever you get, like,
but we have
poisoning.
Strangers pooping in our house.
Yeah. So you don't know what bacteria they have.
Oh,
and so it could make you sick that way. So
we have one of those electric toothbrushes and we could close the panel. And we also have a UV light to disinfect it.
That would work. UV light is good.
So that thing, Fausto, needs to be closed at all times now.
And use the UV light.
And use the UV light.
Yep.
All right.
Yes, dear.
You're the one that brought it up.
Well,
you brought it up.
Well,
yeah, thanks for ruining our lives.
So with microbiology, you have like after I got my degree, I'd tell people that I'd have to make peace with the world again because it was like everywhere was like I knew all the germs that were growing on everything. Mm-hmm. And so it was like I had two choices. I could either become a germaphobe and like not touch anything ever again or just be like, you know what? It hasn't killed me yet.
Yeah. I heard that actually. Using those hand sanitizer lotions is a bad idea.
Yes. Not always. So they're good. Like if you have nothing else, they're fine. But if you constantly use them, it dries your skin out. And so it the barrier of your skin stops working the way that it's supposed to. Mm-hmm.
So like you're at the gym and they have those things at the gym, like on the wall. It's better to wash your hands in a sink with soap and water than to use something like that.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
But if it's in a pinch, like if you're like, I cannot get to soap and water, absolutely go ahead and use a hand sanitizer.
Okay.
Yep.
Like what would be a circumstance that you would need to sanitize your hands, but you're not near soap and water? Like,
well, I mean,
you've been wiping your ass and then you have to eat a hot dog.
I mean, if you're at a festival or something like that, where they don't have
like street festival.
Yeah.
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 And you're nowhere, not going to be near any water and you want to eat something.
Mm-hmm.
With your hands, then that's the...
If you've been riding the CTA and you go to a festival and you're going to want to put your hands all over your food...
Do you use a hand sanitizer?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you carry it with you?
Not always. So.
Do you have it right now with you?
I don't.
You trust us.
Yes. Well, and also I'll go home and wash my hands.
Now, there's a guy in Russia who tried to board an airplane... And he did it naked at the Moscow's airport while shouting that the clothes make him less aerodynamic.
Technically true, but...
Yes, but you're inside of a plane, so what would it matter?
Yeah. And I was like, man, these Trump supporters are really going nuts. He's trying to get into the cockpit.
Oh.
I don't know. I thought it was very interesting. Everybody's so excited about the Mueller. Not sure how you pronounce it.
Mueller.
The report.
It came out.
They need to release it.
Well, here's a couple of things. We know even Trump admits to, a lot of crimes, and the major one being obstruction of justice.
I mean, yeah, it's been out in the open. He can't. I mean, it's like, you know, he's on Twitter, like, yeah, actually, like, actively. Yeah, I mean, that's what he's doing. He's obstructing justice, and no one's called him on it.
So I think what we need to talk about is, like, here we have, we're not in dispute whether he did these crimes. We're wanting justice. And I think that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's like, is he actually going to be, like, we know he's done it, but is he actually going to be prosecuted for it?
He, certainly, you know, it'll probably eventually happen. I have to trust that. You know,
please.
At least the state of New York is not foolish enough to let that go.
Well, we'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm kind of just hoping he drops dead before anything comes of it.
Well, nice. Part of me doesn't want him to drop dead. I want to see him, you know, answer for his crimes. And it's part of it is, like, you know, he's really compromised so much of our lives here in the United States that we can't allow somebody like him to get away with it.
No.
And I think that's the major issue. And man, the Russian bots, the Republican bots are in full force on the internet. And somebody just was like, it's really hard time to talk about politics with a 14-year-old like you. And I said, well, it's really hard to talk about politics with a 3-month-old Twitter account.
Yeah.
Like you.
It's a bot.
You know, it's a bot. You just created this account to start having these conversations with people about this stuff. So it's, and part of it is, like, I'm not too worried about anonymous accounts. It's more like when people we know,
that's always frightening. They follow a bot. They follow, so they take that as news, and then they're a legitimate person passing this garbage off as news.
Yep.
And you're like, how did this happen?
Yep. I know. That's the problem. My own parents actually are, at least as far as I know, they're Trump supporters. So, and I had to call my mother out on spreading, like, fake news sort of stuff.
How does your gender nonconformity sort of jive with them?
And they don't like it at all.
Yeah.
No.
That's a hard place to be.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they have been completely unsupportive. I mean, my parents now call me Gabriel, but they were really resistant to it in the beginning. You know, my mother was, you know, kind of like, well, why didn't you talk to us about this first? And I'm like, what's to talk about?
I'm telling you how it is.
Mom. Yeah.
Because your drag king name is also the name you use in everyday life?
No, I use Gabriel. That's my legal name, but my last name is different. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So in terms of, like, Kamra is your stage name as a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
Gabriel Knox is your stage name as a drag king.
Yep.
And then as a trans guy, Gabriel is also your name.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know, it's confusing. I have too many names.
Maybe like a little chart.
Well, you know, I'm surprised you don't have a drag king name that's separate from, your everyday name.
Yeah. I really, the drag king name came first because I had tried it out. Like, I wanted, you know, like the whole, I mean, a lot of trans people try drag before they actually transition. And so I had done that first, and I just really liked the name Gabriel. I was like, well, I'll just go ahead and keep that.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. Like, throughout my life, I was trying to create drag characters and personas and all this stuff, and people are like, you know, like, where's your gender identity? And I was like, well, it's definitely very non-binary, but it's more like these inventions, these characters that I made, I transitioned them to be more like me so I could be more comfortable as myself. And so people are like, all the time, they're like, what's your drag stage name? What's your character? I'm like, I use the same name that I was given when I was
Faustina.
Born. Oh, people go Faustina, you know, they feminize it and stuff.
Yeah.
But the poster says Fausto.
Yep.
You know, and that messes with their head. And I think sometimes it's really hard if you're, you know, when you decide to create that character and just be just a reflection of you and you're very clear about that. That's just people. It's very difficult for them to handle that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I like the ability to, you know, be like, oh, well, I want to be Kamra today. And I, you know, I can be a little bit more feminine in that way and, you know, do dance. And then I have Gabriel Knox where I can do like burlesque and be like super masculine with burlesque and then drag and stuff. So.
Do you ever play the same bill? What is Cameron? They come on later as a drag king.
So in the Boylesque show that I do, I did do like a belly dance thing and then the burlesque thing. But I just use Gabriel Knox whenever I do that, and which is fine. There's been a part of me that's thought about dropping the Kamra name. Just because I don't really need it anymore, but it's like I have so much name recognition.
And it's exotic, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, it's very gender ambiguous name, right? Yeah. You know?
Oh, you want to talk about J.K. Rowling?
Oh, God.
As if the story hasn't been, you know, beaten to death. But J.K. Rowling, I guess in a DVD of the latest movie that came out, talked about Dumbledore and the other guy?
Grunwald. They had a very passionate relationship or something. She
a very
said
intense
that.
Sexual yes. relationship.
Yeah.
And physical
so,
relationship.
Right. And so, you know, it's not been in any of the books. It hasn't been in any of the movies. So people are always just like, you're retconning it. Is that the right word?
She's kind gay baiting.
Yeah, gay baiting.
Gay baiting. It's like you're saying this to like to appeal to the gay and queer people, but you're not, you're like the straight people, it's something they're not even going to pick up on.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So it's like, you know, she wants the ally cookies, you know, and be like, hey, look, I have representation. I have gay characters, but not actually put them on the screen or in the book or on, you know, and that's kind of what gay baiting is, where it's like, you know, you're suggesting that these characters are gay, but you're not going to give the payoff. Of
like
them.
Chris Hemsworth bending over, presenting his goodness. Bottom to the world.
Wasn't that luscious?
But, you know, J.K. Rowling came under heat last year because she'd liked a couple of tweets that came from some trans exclusionary radical feminists, right?
Right.
Some TERFs.
Yes.
As they say.
Is J.K. Rowling a TERF?
We don't.
Listeners want to know.
Yeah. It's hard to say. I mean, she did. Yeah. So she's liked some tweets that are from accounts that are TERFs. It's hard to know whether she is aware that they're TERFs or not. In the UK right now, they're actually having a really hard time with trans rights. Their Gender Recognition Act is under fire. So they want basically trans people to be able to just go to the NHS and be like, hey, I'm trans. Can I get my, you know, like gender marker changed? And so the TERFs are really, really powerful in the UK. And so they're like, no, we don't want this. And so they're all under fire. And all these UK TERFs have started tweeting stuff about, you know, like men in bathrooms. We're talking about trans women in bathrooms, you know, trying to kind of stoke that fear. And J.K. Rowling has liked a couple of those tweets about like men and, you know, can't have men in bathrooms.
I think she was caught on and she responded that she was just kind of like a clumsy old woman and she didn't. She has since unliked them.
Yeah. So it's hard to say. I mean, she keeps liking them, though. So
she does?
Yeah. There's been a couple of times.
Well, the,
yeah.
the thing is like the TERFs are really, really sneaky with a lot of their stuff. And the thing that's with the TERFs is if you look at their literature, it's the same kind of like same kind of bent as the conservative right.
Well,
it's,
they've allied.
Yeah. So they've allied in a weird way. And in many ways, they're kind of using the TERFs as surrogates for their own kind of agenda, and they're supporting and paying for some of this stuff. So you just get a couple of, you know, crazy lesbians out there, or because they're mostly lesbians, these TERFs, right?
Actually, a lot of them are cis straight women. Especially in the UK.
I always think of TERFs as being lesbians in my
mind. Some are.
Because of the Michigan Women's Music Festival.
Yes.
There's that.
As if anybody wanted to go in the first place.
Aren't they rebooting that?
They're rebooting it.
Oh, God.
With trans people.
Oh, well, that's good, I guess.
But they're kind of not too. That's the word. Like they're
the word on the streets.
They're fucking it up again.
Not surprised.
So I'm like, just move forward, people. I don't know. Moving Netflix, Stranger Things 3, the premiere, the trailer has become the most watched video on Netflix's channel. And
oh, really?
I actually haven't seen it yet.
It's not out yet. So it's coming.
But the trailer.
I haven't seen the trailer yet.
Yeah, it's fun. It's cool. It's the same thing. Monsters, video games,
of course.
You know, 80s references and kids
love
going
all that stuff.
Yeah.
With their awkwardness, you know. And
I just binge watched the whole the taking of Madeline McCann, the little girl who was, because I never paid attention in 2007 when this girl was kidnapped. It was all over the news and stuff, but I'm just like, what am I going to do about it? You know what
it's,
I mean?
I guess it's
what
like Portugal's JonBenet Ramsey.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Where exactly. the parents were accused.
Other people were accused. There was this, there was that. I mean, I was like, how much juice does this story have to warrant 8 hours of this? But actually, I have to tell you, I was drawn in within the first 10 minutes. The first diagram that showed like where the parents ate and like where the kid was when the kid was snatched, I was just like, this is amazing. And so
it's addictive.
Yeah.
But that's Netflix to its science. Yeah. They just want to rope you in. It's kind of like, you know, staying up all night drinking and doing drugs. Sure, it's a lot of fun, but the next day you're miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And with Netflix, you want to binge. But the next day you're like, why did I do that?
No, I'm glad. I feel like I got like many of the angles covered from that thing and know a little bit better. But, you know, it really is disheartening just like how children are trafficked in this world.
Oh,
well,
scary.
One series I'm really looking forward is The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance.
Okay, so I have a story for you. So I have a story for you about Dark Crystal that it's going to flip for you.
It's going to make my crystal harder.
Yeah. Yes. So a couple of years ago, they actually had a competition in order to write the prequel book. I entered that competition under my dead name. So if you go to Dark Crystal's website, you'll find my dead name.
You find you there, yeah.
Yeah. And so I submitted the story that I had. They had guidelines, you know, and all that stuff. So I submitted the story and I didn't win, obviously, but I did get editor's choice.
Oh, well, congratulations.
What was the plot? What was that in a nutshell?
So it was about two Gelflings that are basically like trying to get the word out that the Skeksis are evil now, because they weren't evil in the beginning, you know. So
they're, until they divided, right?
Yeah. So they're in the crystal
Skeksis
was cut.
And they know it.
Yeah. So they're like trying to get the word out about it.
So for people who are not familiar with this, it's Jim Henson's stoner fantasy from the early 80s. In a world where they had these godlike creatures. I don't remember the names of them. They were not the Skeksis, though.
The Mystics.
The Mystics.
Yes.
And the Dark Crystal cracked, forcing the godlike creatures into male and female versions of themselves.
Well, not really. It was they were kind of genderless. So the Skeksis were like the bird like ones.
Yeah. So they had that voice.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And then the Mystics were the ones that, you know,
the big,
they
slow.
Yeah.
You know.
And they used to be one person.
They used to be one. And then at the end of the movie they rejoin. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, this is a very advanced idea, because it's basically it was like two. I always thought the Skeksis were female and the Mystics were male.
I don't think so.
And it was very like, you know, sort of like women are evil and men are good or whatever. But that, you know, combined the genders, you had these gender binary gods, non-binary gods. And there was like the splitting of the gender is what caused heartache in this world.
Mm. Yeah.
And so for a lot of trans people, like the Dark Crystal, kind of like the Neverending Story and other films spoke to them because of that idea.
Is this the movie that killed Jim Henson?
No, that was Labyrinth.
Labyrinth.
When he was filming in the bog, his wetsuit
got pneumonia.
Leaked,
and he developed pneumonia from it, but because he's a Christian Scientist and a workaholic, he went to the hospital at the very last second he needed to. And he was so nice, the cab driver dropped him off a block away, because he didn't want to inconvenience the cab driver. He walked to the hospital and collapsed in the emergency room floor and died later that day.
That's terrible.
Yeah, anyways, Jim Henson's vision lives on in the Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. It's all going to be practical effects, real live puppetry. The only thing they're going to use green screen to remove the puppeteers. So you're going to see some hardcore Skeksis on Skeksis action.
Sorry. We're looking forward to
hard to say that.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for it.
They're showing like in the trailers the Skeksis wearing like this armor or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just hilarious and wonderful. And they bring the astrologer weird lady with the
what was her name?
Time moves forward, backwards. Who cares? Time is irrelevant. This movie's irrelevant.
I'll have to catch that again.
It's really fantastic.
I'm excited for that.
They have the world's oldest and biggest Tyrannosaurus Rex. It was discovered in 1991, but it is now on display, and they named him Scotty. And he's almost 40 feet long. and weighed almost 20,000 pounds. Wow. Could you imagine? And so not only is the longest one, but he's also the oldest one. They figure he's about 30 years old. And he saw a lot of action in his life because he's got some broken ribs and some like some scars on his bones. So he probably got into some pretty heavy duty fights.
Wow, that's awesome. I wonder how that compares to Sue, the T-Rex we have here.
Oh, let's look.
Well, North America is known for its tyrants with small hands.
Size. Oh, God.
Sorry. It's like, anyway, Trump's like, is somebody talking about me?
They have her in meters.
But it's in Canada.
No, she was 12.3 meters and stands 33.6 meters tall.
I don't think Sue's very big.
I don't think Sue's very big.
In terms of T-Rex's skeletons that we've discovered. But
I know they were the most complete. And you know that they use they, them pronouns.
For Sue.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yeah. They changed that. What was it, last year or something, right? Because they were like, we don't know their gender, right?
Yep. So Sue uses they, them pronouns.
Well, you know, we sort of do that with our dog, Jesse. Like, people are like, this is really funny things. Like, they're walking your dog and they think your dog is female or male or whatever. And they're just like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, and I'm like, it's a dog. The dog doesn't have any gender identity.
And, you know, but then they get all upset about trans people, you know, like, please call me, you know, he, him. And they're like, well, I don't know. I think of you as a girl.
Hey, listen, if you can call your car a girl, you know, if you can give her car a name and be cool with it, you can be cool with somebody changing their name or changing their whatever gender identity they want to present as, you know. And it's, and part of it is, I think Alexandra Billings said it best. It's not any of that that causes a lot of, you know, hate. It's that it's seeing somebody pursuing their life and their dreams. And here you are not doing that. And it's really a hard pill. It's a bitter pill to take.
It's a little bit like jealousy.
As Mr. Banks says in Mary Poppins.
Yeah, it's a jealousy that, you know, like, oh, I can't be my authentic self. So I'm going to make sure that no one else can be their authentic self either.
And that's why you got to fly that kite and transcend up into the highest heights.
Yeah, definitely.
And when you're there, sign up to become a Plus subscriber. Feastfun.com/plus.
Yes, honey.
Or visit our new Patreon
at
patreon.com/feastoffun.
Yay! And you can see previews of Cooking with Drag Queens. We had a T.S. Madison doing terrible things for pickle.
Oh my God, what she did to that pickle, you won't even imagine.
Yeah, but you only can see it if you go to the patreon.com/feastoffun. Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure having you on the show, Camera Gabriel.
Yes, thank you.
I absolutely love that you came and shared your story with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Don't mess with Camera.
Is it okay if I plug my own Patreon?
I would love that, yeah.
Yeah, so I have one. It's Camera Belly Dance. And I have videos that you can, it's like makeup tutorials, how to do belly dance, little combos, that sort of thing. So, yeah, you can get my Patreon as well.
Ooh, and what's the URL, though? Patreon.com/...
Camera Belly Dancer.
And it's spelled K-A-M-R-A-H.
Yes.
Belly Dancer.
Yep.
And sign up for just pennies a day, you can get some trans belly dancing magic in your mind.
Yep.
Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Bye, everybody!
Bye.
Bye. Bye.